I'm Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and ESPN.
I'm Mike Lubega of the New York Daily News and MLB.com.
And I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press, and welcome to this edition of the Sports Reporters Podcast. We do this every Monday and Friday. Glad to have you joining us if this is your first time or if you're joining us as you have regularly. Nice to have you with us. And it's rare that we can begin a Sports Reporters Podcast or over the many years we did the show on ESPN on television talking about soccer. But it is very, very hard not to be talking about soccer, remarkably so, because here we are, an American podcast talking about a tournament, the World Cup, that doesn't have an American team in it. But that, guys, to me, I think to both of you, is how compelling this tournament is already. And we're just getting to the third games of the group stage. We haven't even gotten to knockout yet, and there's been so much drama and so much passion and so many really good teams that have already looked down the barrel of the rifle and have survived. I find it fascinating. I'm hooked on this thing. I just wish the damn stuff ran on time, because I have to log off ESPN from about 11 a.m. on, because I don't want to see the results until I can watch the games on tape. What are your thoughts about the tournament, guys?
Mitch, you guys have heard me talk about this before. I watched this event with great joy as a sports fan, and great envy that we do not have anything comparable, especially now that the American team is not involved in this year's competition. And there hasn't been a comparable moment to what these countries, who actually have a legitimate chance to win the World Cup this year, feel, and the emotions they feel since Lake Placid in 1980, when our hockey kids beat the Soviets in the semifinal game in hockey. And you're right, it's been fantastic so far. My friends and my kids have turned me into Tottenham fans. I love Harry Kane, and I love Ronaldo. And every year we live through the melodrama and the soap opera of poor Messi, who's going to be thwarted again. And when you watch that Germany-Sweden game on Saturday, and you saw Chris's goal, but not only saw the joy for Germany and know what they were up against in that moment, late in that game, but also saw the faces of the Swedish fans, I'm thinking, I just want to experience that just one time in the World Cup. And I'll tell you guys in a minute where I was when Landon Donovan gave us a run 8 years ago and scored that goal against Algeria.
Well, I've long been an advocate of international competition. I loved the Olympics. I fell in love with the Olympics from the first time I went, and my first was 92, and have a feel for this thing. And you know, there's so many reasons why it resonates elsewhere more than it does. Well, there's one particular reason, in my opinion, my take on why we will never, ever get there, even if we win the World Cup in some year, and it is that still the United States of America has the largest smorgasbord table of sporting options for its people than any country in the world. There is no other country that has the magnitude of the four big leagues that we have, not even counting the fifth, which is the MLS. No other country has this. And so their energies and their passion are focused on the one game, which is the universal world game, which is soccer/football. And they don't have these other options. Americans will always have these other options. And I don't think we would ever, even if we were to win the World Cup, have that kind of overall America, national frenzy and passion displayed. I just don't think we would ever get there.
We won't. I totally agree with you. No other country has Major League Baseball and NFL and NBA and NHL, not to mention college sports, which are uniquely American, and our religion in many parts of the country. So you take all that passion, if you rolled it all into a single team, we would blow everybody out of the water. But we don't. It is dispersed. What's remarkable to me about the passion that you see from so many of these countries is that you got to recognize, for the most part, their star players aren't playing in their countries most of the year. The guys that they're all rooting for, the Messis, Ronaldos, and all that, they're over in another land across the sea most of the time, and they only come back to play for the national competitions or qualifiers and once every 4 years for the World Cup. And that can be so into those players when they really don't. So imagine if you only got to see LeBron James play in America once every 4 years. Yeah. You heard about him. He was a star in Australia, but you had to stay up till 4 a.m. to watch his games. How passionate could you be about him? And yet, that's the nationalistic pride of this game. That's the history of the World Cup. And I think we're always, Mike, going to be watching through the window in terms of this thing and never have the same emotion.
I completely disagree with both of you about what it would be like in this country if the United States were ever in a World Cup final match. You go back and look at the ratings we got in this country in 2014 with a team that everybody knew wasn't going to win the World Cup. Go back and look at the ratings when Tim Howard was making 16 saves against Belgium. I have experienced a small sampling of this when Landon Donovan scored his goal against Algeria. I was with my sons in London, and we're desperate to find a place to watch the game because England was playing at the same time. And we finally found a joint called the Texas Embassy Cantina, which it's so good on so many levels. And the place was jammed with Americans who had come from all corners of London because they found out that this was a place that you could watch this game. And again, it's just one place in one city and far from home. And when you saw what it was like and felt what it was like when Landon Donovan scored that goal against Algeria, it was like watching Jeter win a game at Yankee Stadium at that time. I am telling you that, yes, we have more options. We have the NBA. We have the NFL. The NFL's our biggest football. And we've got baseball. I'm just telling you, with the way this country becomes more and more diverse, and unless, of course, the president has his way, and then the country goes back to being, largely whiter than Wonder Bread, this would be an epic sports event in this country, and it would be the only thing comparable to what the country felt like in 1980 on that Friday night when we beat Russia. I think you're totally discounting how popular this game is, not just with people who have come to our country from across the world, but how popular it is at the youth level, even though our best athletes don't go into this sport the way they do in football in other countries.
Mike, you really don't think we have there is a very substantial portion of the population that is not only indifferent to this sport, but actually loathe it, that despise it, that hate it, that delight in dividing it. I don't know.
Bobby, go back and look at what those crowds were in the Meadowlands and in the Rose Bowl when the thing was in this country. I am telling you, yes, I know it, but for the twitchy ADHD sports fan who wants 47 fast breaks in the next 12 minutes and wants everybody to hit 10 home runs in the next inning in baseball, I'm telling you that there is a passion for this sport in this country that, and again, it may never happen. We're not sending our LeBrons into soccer. Okay, I get that. But if it ever did happen, I think it would be one of the great sports events in the history of the United States of America. I could be wrong about this, but I'm telling you, even when we've had a little taste, we've seen how the country will get behind our national team.
Oh, speaking of which, LeBron is a soccer enthusiast, as of course was Kobe, who of course lived in Italy. But LeBron is not only a soccer enthusiast; he's also an investor, as far as I know, in Liverpool with the John Henry people. So,
if he can get out there and play, there may be more interest.
I'm just throwing this out there for the fun.
I know. I'm looking at the history of the ratings here while you're talking, Mike, and they never have rated high. They've never even gotten over a 10 rating, even when the United States. They've never gotten over a 9 or over a 10. When the United States was involved in 2014 were the highest rating and the highest rated games. But, I mean, fractional compared to a Super Bowl.
Gotten to the big game.
They haven't gotten to the big game. They've gotten. But here's the other thing about it. Doesn't matter. I mean, it's not an argument that's worth having until the time comes. I do agree with you that we have lost the ability to root on a national. I think you'll all agree on a national level the way we once did, even in 1980. with the kids playing hockey because everybody's a professional now. They robbed America of that and other nations of that when they started putting, for example, in basketball NBA teams. We all remember growing up as kids when America would, you know, had Olympic basketball teams and there was the inevitable showdown with Russia. You know, remember the game with Doug Collins getting knocked over in the final seconds and us losing to them by a point and all. You know, the whole country was up in arms over that loss. But no one's going to root like that anymore at the Olympic Games because the big team sports are riddled now with professionals. And even though hockey has now gone backwards and put other kids in, they're half professionals and half NHL. Some countries, they're former NHL players now playing. So that whole magic of our unknown kids coming along and taking on the world, that's gone. And we're not going to have that in the Olympics. So I agree. The World Cup would be the only time that we would have that. But I'm kind of with Bob on the fact that it's not just that people don't like it. It's a lot of people don't understand it. And even if you advance all the way in the World Cup, what are you going to play, six games? Six games is not a lot of time for a country to learn the sport. So I don't know how crazy. It's not the same kind of crazy, let's put it this way, as England or these other, or Portugal or Brazil or Argentina or Colombia when they watch, because they know the game and they know every foul and they know everything in it.
This country is full of people who have come here from, we're not talking about the basic sports fan from Clinton, Iowa. I am just telling you that the people who love this sport and brought their passion and their love from it from other places and until, you know, we started shutting down the borders, they're there. They are waiting. And by the way, they consider themselves to be Americans.
That'd be an interesting thing to see, a lot of the people who were recent immigrants, are they rooting for America, if America was in this thing, or are they rooting for their home country, which, you know, particularly in the cases of Mexico and other South American countries that are, or Central American that are here in America recently, there's a lot of them. They do better in the World Cup than we do. Anyhow, separate from what we would do if we were in it, because we're not in it, this is fascinating for the ones that are in it. I mean, the Germany game, only the most recent example of that. That was such an interesting game to watch, and you saw how much it meant to the country, and you saw in so many of these games have been decided in 90 minutes plus. I mean, yeah. You're watching, it's 1-1 all the way to the 90th minute, and then the deciding goal comes. That one was at 95 minutes. Almost out of extra time. And here we are, you know, with only a handful of teams already in, and getting to the third game, there's still a lot of teams that are on the bubble. A lot of very, very good teams that don't know yet if they're going to be in. That includes Germany. That includes England and Belgium are in, and then they play one another, which will be interesting. Yeah. By the way, something that I saw on that in England that they're writing about now, and this has its parallel in American sports when a team clinches the playoffs or clinches a first round bye, mm-hmm. and then has to play a game. So England and Belgium are going to play, and they're the two best in their division, and the English press is all worried that the coach is going to rest, you know, the guys that he's been hot with and get the other guys some action because they've been hanging around for a month and they haven't been playing and lose their mojo, you know. And so there's that question of, do you keep playing your guys in the third round game?
Mitch, it's even better than that. Belgium, I was reading this morning. England and Belgium have scored, they're in the same group. They've scored the same number of goals. They've given up the same number of goals. So the winners of the meeting in Kaliningrad will win the group. But if the match finishes as a draw, the places will be decided first on
fair play,
Bob. On fair play. Yellow cards and red cards and straight red cards and yellow and straight red cards. I want this to happen so much.
Can you imagine if the NFL used that as a tiebreaker in the playoffs? How many penalties you had?
Yeah. Bob, fair play. Shouldn't it always come down to fair play?
I love it. We love chaos. We're always in favor of chaos. That would definitely be it. But we're talking about the stoppage play. Brazil got two goals in stoppage time and a 2-0 victory. So
But you know, and guys, I told you this. I'm going to be at Wimbledon with Zach Lupica next week, and I want England. First of all, I want England to have a chance, and second of all, I mean, I want to be somewhere in a pub or somewhere with Zach Lupica watching a knockout game in that country.
Oh, God,
next
yeah.
week. Oh my God, it'd be so great.
If they have a game, you're not going to be able to avoid. You don't have to be in a pub. It's out in the street. I've been in England many, many times during the World Cup over the years. And, you know, all the years we covered Wimbledon, it always kind of ran concurrently with it. And there's nothing like England during the World Cup because they take it on the chin so hard when they lose. And they get their hopes up and they get their hope. And then this year, and this is the one, and this is the guy. And, you know, when Beckham was playing and when was it Bafa, the guy that they had, was playing, and something inevitably happens. They're the Gus Grissom of soccer, you know. So something just happens to them, and it hasn't happened yet. I mean, they have the biggest blowout in the World Cup so far, and Harry Kane is their latest hero. But you know, it's just the British way that something's going to happen in the knockout rounds that they're going to be lamenting forever. And you do want to be there for that, Michael.
Mitch, it'll be a drama. Blunder of some sort.
Right.
What kind of sort of blunder? I don't know, but I guarantee it will be a blunder. And someone will be disgraced with the blunder. Well, by the way, speaking of blunders, it's that goalie, the Korean goalie, who fisted the ball right into him instead of catching it and wound up leaving a rebound for a goal. I mean, you wonder what's going through his head.
There have been a lot of own goals in this tournament.
Well, this wasn't an own goal, but this was a dumb play by the goalie and the goalkeeper. And I mean, he, instead of catching the ball, which he should have done, he punched it, and he punched it right to a striker who, you know, who struck. So there we go.
Yeah. Anyway, of course, we'll watch, as you mentioned, Michael, the messy drama. Messy drama.
Oh, no, Mitch. One year I was there. By the way, I want England to do well because I want the country to be happy, okay? but I was there one year when they lost to Germany, and the London papers the next day were, let me just say, full of World War II references, mm-hmm. okay? Let's just say that they didn't take it as well as I would have hoped they would.
Yeah, there are certain teams that certain other teams do not like to lose to, and that'll be interesting.
I'm going to this might be the appropriate time, therefore, since we're talking about England and Germany and World War II, to reference something, and you both are probably aware of it. But in 1966, when England was playing the final game against Germany, here this is the lead in one of the papers. On the day before, the lead was as follows. If on the morrow Germany should defeat England at its national game, let us remind them that twice in this century we have defeated them at theirs.
It's just
conveniently omitting the contribution of their American allies, of course, but it made its point.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I guess we weren't involved in any of those efforts. I think Group D, the one with Croatia, Nigeria, Iceland, and Argentina, is the most interesting to me. And all that stuff is up to play. Outside of those four, Croatia is the only one that's actually clinched a spot. But Argentina and Iceland with their tiebreakers, and everybody, of course, is rooting for Iceland because as we say around here, their entire country is half the population of Detroit. And somehow they managed to have a team and America doesn't. And Argentina with Messi, you know, just to get him to the, I mean, if he goes out in the group stage, it's so depressing. And he's clearly such a great player on such
who's
a mediocre
our Messi,
team.
Mitch? Who do we have in this country who is comparable to Messi?
Well, I mean, it depends on the era that you're talking about. For many years, it was like Jim Kelly or Will Chamberlain.
Mike, I got one for you. Your backyard until they won in 2009. A-Rod. A-Rod was Messi.
Yeah, but nobody liked A-Rod.
Yeah. That's true. People didn't like him.
The Bills, Mitch, you know what? Messi, poor little Messi, might be the Buffalo Bills. That's who he might be.
Buffalo Bills rolled into one. But there's always guys who just don't get there, and yet you're pulling for them, and they're great
players. Dan Marino never won the Super Bowl. I mean, but
O.J. Simpson, Barry Sanders, guys who Dan Marino, you know, people who are admired and just don't win a championship. But Messi's admired like around the world, not just in his country. And you watch, I've watched almost every game, and he's clearly playing with the Washington Generals instead of the Harlem Globetrotters. That team just doesn't have a lot of
passion. And Mitch, he's in the same era, in the same world, in the same universe with a guy who's a better player, who's taller and better looking, and that's Ronaldo.
Well, is he the better player, or is he just
He plays a different game, though.
He's the guy who stands down at the end of the court and waits for the long pass and then dunks it. You know.
Think he's a bit more. But Mr. Ryan, would you explain to Mr. Album that Ronaldo's a bit more than the guy waiting for somebody to throw him the ball?
You know what I'm saying. The rest of the team is setting him up to make the winning goal. That's not what Messi
does. It's hard to get a hat trick.
Yeah, that's true. Although, did Kane have one yesterday?
Yes.
Oh, I love him. I love watching him.
Two penalty kicks involved.
Well, it's a great event. It's only going to get better. You're right. We're only in the early innings of this, and it feels like everything's happened already.
Yeah. All right. Before we move on to other sports, today's episode of the Sports Reporters is brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. This is at Buffalo Wild Wings. They admit they sometimes go overboard with their limited-time offerings. They can't help themselves. Take their new signature sampler. For $15, you can get wings and three shareable options, like fried pickles or cheese curds. And then there's the aptly named over-the-top nachos, a literal mountain of crispy tortilla chips loaded with your choice of pulled pork or honey-barbecued grilled chicken, corn, jalapenos, and more. You can top it all off with the new platinum margarita. Go overboard with Buffalo Wild Wings today. Wings, beer, sports, available for a limited time while supplies last, and please drink responsibly.
Well, we are reading now, and Bob is probably more in tune with this than even you or me, Mitch, but Julian Edelman is going to mount what is described as a very vigorous defense of himself and an attack on the process and really on the NFL's drug policy for his 4-game suspension for violating the league's drug policy. And I'm going to have a parting shot on another guy who did this once in another sport named Ryan Braun. But every time I think of when I hear of something like this, guys, I think of Braun, and I also think of the last guy to mount a vigorous defense of himself, in which with a scorched earth policy beyond anything we had ever witnessed in sports. And that's a guy who now is acts like the mayor of baseball on Sunday Night Baseball. And that's Alex Rodriguez, who was willing to take down his team doctors, his team, Bud Selig, and anybody. And you know what? Ended up getting banged in the end anyway.
Well, this is the same mode of defense, right, that Richard Sherman had, and he won. Am I correct that the basis of his appeal was about the handling of the with those stuff? And this is apparently he's hiring this guy Spiro, who's a big time lawyer who was involved with NBA players stuff, and he's gonna come out swinging. So we'll see.
Well, is there any suspicion, Bob, that because he missed he missed all last year, didn't he? 2017 he missed.
Yes.
That, you know, in the effort to get back, you're in your
30s. We always hear that. Yeah.
You got to get back to where you were, and doing your body doesn't heal so well.
Yeah.
Doing it for his teammates. Is there any suspicion that this is part of just a desperate attempt to make sure that he's healthy and took something a little overboard?
Of course, in the times we live in, everyone is always under suspicion when in this matter. Everyone. There's always going to be somebody's going to say, well, you know what happened here. I want to say this in general terms. If in fact the substance here in question is human growth hormone, then we've got to have this national. This is not ludicrous. This has got this. To me, HGH should be totally legit. If in fact the purpose of HGH and its only purpose in this regard is to help you recuperate and not to make you better, I don't understand why all athletes don't have access to it. I don't know that it is HGH, but if it is, I'm firing a preemptive strike here. It's ridiculous, and all sports should get with it and legitimize HGH.
Bob, you're buying into the narrative that Mitch was just speaking of ironically. that you're just doing it for your team, that you're just doing it to get healthy faster. And it is hard for me to believe that human growth hormone is simply a recovery tool. It is more than a recovery tool, Bob. And all studies say it's more than a recovery tool. Now, here's what Dan Graziano wrote and referenced Monday Morning Quarterback today, I think, on ESPN.com. The substance for which Edelman tested positive wasn't one the league's drug testers recognized. That remains one of the two key issues at the heart of Edelman's appeal. The other, according to a source, involves a mishandling of the documentation and delivery of Edelman's test results. During the course of the investigation, it was learned that NFL made mistakes in the manner in which the test results were handled. Edelman is arguing that the mishandling of the evidence is one of the reasons he should be exonerated. But I will ask this question, having just read those two paragraphs from my buddy Danny Graziano. Do you think he took something that violated the league's substance abuse policy? I mean, not substance, but policy on performance enhancing drugs.
Knowingly. That's the key, don't you think?
But doesn't ultimately matter, though, does it? Well, I mean, ultimately.
No, it doesn't ultimately matter, but it does ultimately matter in terms of judging whether he's an unfortunate victim or he was deliberately trying to cheat the system.
Mike, I'll put it.
It doesn't matter from the way that they're going to judge it.
I'll phrase it this way. It is far more logical to think that he did take something illegal than it is to think that he didn't. And obviously, I know for sure. But is it, well, am I going to be far more surprised if it turns out that he didn't than
Bob, I'll just read to you just from a cursory check of the internet while we're having this discussion. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Growth hormone is a hormone that stimulates growth, cell reproduction, and cell regeneration in humans and other animals. It is thus important in human development and, oh, by the way, in growing better athletes.
Well, look, human growth hormone is the same as steroids. It is used in medicine by doctors under a controlled level and for specific things. You know, we've all had steroids at some point in our life. I know I have.
Prednisone. The times I've had to take prednisone, it turned me into a werewolf.
Yeah. So, and human growth hormone is used in medical treatments to help people get over certain things. So the question that it exists and it can be used positively isn't what's at doubt here, Bob. What's at doubt is that when you start using it improper dosages or for purposes in which it was not intended or not to save a life, but to get stronger or heal faster or whatever it is, now you're talking about abuse of a drug that is otherwise legal under certain circumstances, and B, danger, because as with steroids taken under, you know, a nose spray and things like that under controlled things are fine. Steroids overdone can kill you. Well, it's the same thing with human growth hormone. So this, and you do not want to legalize that and then say, we'll just leave it up to you guys to determine how much you want to take. That's why they haven't done it to this point, because the potential damage of abuse of it is far outweighs the periodic or occasional benefits of using it under a medical supervision. You know, somebody would abuse it if they make it legal. But isn't one of the problems with human growth hormone that it is difficult to detect? Hasn't that been over the years? Mm-hmm. Hasn't that been one of the reasons that people have gone to it? So I don't know. I mean, you know, and we should say right here, we have no idea that this is the substance involved with Julian Edelman. And we should not even suggest that it's so. Michael pointed out.
Well, we're free to speculate. That's all. It's been people.
We're speculating.
That was the original speculation that I first heard when this thing came down. Was the supposition that it could very well be HGH. So, but we don't. That's not a given. And maybe someday we'll find out. But I'm not sure what we're going to learn.
Bob, do you think at the end of this, it'll be proven in New England that Edelman was just the victim of somebody taking air out of his human growth hormone?
Oh, har har.
Well, from a football perspective, this is not a position that the Patriots want to lose a really reliable player. I mean, they no longer have a couple of the guys who they had last year, right?
And Amendola and
Cooks is gone.
Yep.
And, you know, Edelman is probably the most reliable receiver, if you go back to pre-2017, that Tom Brady has to throw to right now. Isn't he?
Yeah.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
This would be a big loss for them. And you know, and the Patriot Bob Kraft is probably thinking, I need this controversy like I need a hole right in the head. But Bob, let me ask you something. Do you feel as time goes on, and when I write about this subject now, I just say, listen, if you think that everybody ought to get to take whatever they want to, you're allowed to think that way. I don't happen to think so. Do you feel yourself softening on the whole issue of performance enhancing drugs? And, but you know, it sounds to me, Mitch, like pretty soon he'll be voting for juicers to get into Cooperstown.
With regard to the Hall of Fame, my position is as follows. It has been for a number of years. I say that someday I may wake up and say, you know what? I give up. I let them all in. We do not know which juiced pitchers pitched to which juiced batters. We do not know how many balls that went over the fence would have landed on the warning track absent the juice. We don't know how many guys who throw 93 would only throw 90 with the juice, without the juice. And so to hell with it, let them all in. And I haven't gotten there yet, but I have to tell you that somehow I can feel it. I'm getting closer. I'm in the red zone on that one as I'm heading toward the end zone.
And to do you attribute that, Bob? Is that just age, or is that just
fatigue?
No,
I'm listening to other. I'm trying to be open minded, and there's an argument out there that I find is very compelling and very rational among the arguments that can be made for allowing them in. And one of the arguments is the Hall. It should be the history of baseball. They're part of the history of baseball. It was pervasive in an era. There was a level playing field in the sense that so many people were doing it in both areas. And stop trying to be judge and jury and it's not
okay. But that's different. That's different than what Mike is asking you, I think, in that that's the Hall of Fame vote for a particular era, the juiced athlete era.
Yeah.
But are you softening your stance in terms of allowing it in sports
a better world,
today?
No, in a better world, I mean, I would like to have it absent these aids. No. If I could wave my magic wand, I'd prevent them. I would have, it would definitely be illegal. Yeah, So I'd like to see it without it. But we know that they're out there. We know that somebody's always going to want to push an envelope. Somebody's always going to want to cheat. The cops, the bad guys have been ahead of the good guys in the labs going way back to the East Germans and all that. And that's, so that's still the way it is.
You know, my favorite story, I'm not going to mention the hitter because he was never actually tested positive. But my favorite story about steroids in baseball is after drug testing had come into the sport. And let's just say there had been a player who had a significant bump statistically in his power numbers. But then drug testing comes into the sport this year, and Buck Showalter is managing the Texas Rangers, and Oral Hershiser is his pitching coach at the time. And the hitter in question hits one day in Arlington and does his bat flip and thinks it's out because, it had gone out the last couple of years. And the ball fell far short of the right field fence. And Oral Hershiser stood on the top step of the dugout and said, "Not this year, big boy."
Wow.
Yep. Yeah, that's baseball.
All right, we have some baseball to talk about, but Mike, first you've got a little message for our listeners.
Yes. And interesting, and here's a good segue for you, Mitch. You know, Reggie used to call fat pitches in baseball mattress pitches. Today's episode of the Sports Reporters is also brought to you by Mattress Firm. Guys, I have a hypothetical question. Don't answer out loud or those around you, of course it's only us, will think you're odd, and we already think all of us are odd. But who doesn't think they're getting enough great sleep and would like to score big with a mattress upgrade? As we mentioned earlier, Mattress Firm is here for you to do just that. Whether you're sore from a game of pickup soccer or haven't played sports in years, they have a mattress for everybody and every budget. And right now, you can use the code PODCAST10 at mattressfirm.com/podcast, and you can take an additional 10% off already low prices. Mattress Firm has more than 3,000 stores nationwide, meaning there are no road games for finding a perfect bed at the perfect price because they're near you. And they'll deliver to you on the same or next day for free. Talk about delivering in the clutch. They're like if pro baseball's best closer took Mattress Firm. And you can even sleep on it for 120 nights to make sure it fits like a glove. Head to mattressfirm.com/podcast and take 10% off today and start sleeping better tomorrow. They've always had the perfect game plan in place to ensure you the best mattress for your body and your budget. Well, a very interesting weekend for the New York Yankees in baseball. And any Yankee fan listening, I'd like to apologize because I wrote a column the other day seeing where they were in relation to the 1998 Yankees, and they were about three or four games behind before they went to St. Petersburg and the world's worst ballpark and proceeded to get swept by the Tampa Bay Rays. Even where the Rays even swept them, Bob and Mitch, wearing the ugly Devil Rays crap that they did when they first came into existence. And it's the first time that the Yankees have been swept this year. They had been, I think 47-6, some crazy number, since starting out 9-9. Gary Sanchez was running out of ball yesterday. He's on his way to the DL. Masahiro Tanaka is already on the DL. The ironic thing is that Giancarlo Stanton actually started to hit, and they still get swept this weekend. And all of that happens, Mr. Ryan, as the Old Town team is on its way into Yankee Stadium next weekend for an end of June, sort of early 4th of July weekend three-game series.
One that obviously we've all circled on our calendar long ago, which should be very interesting. The Red Sox themselves did something yesterday that was atypical, which is they gave some Chris Sale a few runs. Mitch has provided us with some interesting statistics about where he ranks among the pitchers in baseball in terms of his stats as opposed to his WL. And he ranks with just about anybody in baseball except in the WL because they have, I think that now with that victory, they're 9-8 in his 17 starts.
It's crazy.
And yeah, but
it's not as bad as what's happened to DeGrom with our
DeGrom.
Sad Mets,
yeah, he's the leader in
like
the clubhouse.
That. It's like right? that, though. It is.
He's the leader in the clubhouse. I know DeGrom in that regard. But anyway, Sale has held up his end of the bargain. They just curiously haven't hit well for him. They had just emerged from a stretch in which they weren't hitting very much at all. In fact, we're beaten 1-0, as we like to say, twice within a week span, and then suddenly broke out with 9 runs one day and 20 hits the next day. So maybe they're starting to swing the bats overall. And they did, but their big quest, guys, Pedroia, I think, is through. And they need a second baseman, and they got to be in the market for a second baseman. But
well, and obviously Sanchez injury, depending on how long this goes on. I mean, anytime you lose an everyday catcher, that's a big deal. I don't know if that's coincidental that they had this crappy weekend in Tampa. And again, if they come back and take 2 out of 3 from Boston, everybody's going to say everything's
fine.
They
got to go to Philly first. It's interesting. The Yankee, especially the way the Yankee pitchers have had misadventures on the bases historically. They got to play three against the Phillies first on the road. Ooh.
Yeah. Well, the Boston series is going to be great. And you know, every time sitting out, I mean, you guys are in the two cities that we're talking about, but sitting out here in Detroit and just checking the standings every 3 or 4 days and just looking at how head and shoulders above the rest, along with Houston, New York and Boston continue to be. And both of them, and of course I take great note with the Boston case because the players come from Detroit, their successes in free agency in terms of the guys that they've signed are phenomenal. And Sale has certainly delivered the goods. And there's a fella named J.D. Martinez, who, Mike, I do recall you doubting a little bit earlier at the very, very, very beginning of the season when
not for long.
Not for long.
I do understand 162 game seasons.
Yeah, but he's going to have a very
good 162 game season. He's the MVP of those two. He is the MVP of these two teams right now, without question. And he's
way better, by the way, than he ever was with Detroit. He was good with Detroit, but he never dominated the
Mitch,
way that he
we've
is.
We've talked about this before. He got DFA'd by the Houston Astros, I think 4 years ago. He got DFA'd. We talked about this. They couldn't find a taker until Mr. Avila took him with the Tigers. This great baseball drama, Mitch and Bob, plays out against the following backdrop. I honestly believe both the Yankees and the Red Sox are going to win more than 100 games this year. And one of them, when they reconvene for the last three games of the regular season at Fenway Park, thank you, schedule maker, one of those 100-plus win teams is going to be fighting to stay out of a one-game wild card situation, which at some point, as much fun as those games are, baseball's got to take a look at a system where you could win 104 games, run into a hot pitcher, and go home.
By the way, we cannot exit this discussion as Northeast-centric as it is without acknowledging that somebody to get to the World Series is going to have to go through Houston, Texas again.
Yeah.
And maybe Cleveland, Ohio, because attention must be paid to what is happening with the Fighting Franconas lately.
Yeah, they are. They're rounding into form. But Houston coming out recently, a 12-game winning streak. They're tied with the Red Sox for the best lead, best record in baseball. And I think they are the best team in baseball. They are, to me, clearly the team to beat.
I have a question. I have a question about the Astros.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Get over it. Here's a question about the Astros. And I understand that A.J. Hinch, who did such a brilliant job in the postseason, was able to win the World Series by relying on starting pitchers as closers in the two biggest moments of his team season. Yeah. Game 7 against the Yankees, game 7 against the Dodgers. He did it with Lance McCullers against the Yankees, and then he flipped the scenario and did it with Charlie Morton. Do you think the Houston Astros, as wonderfully a deep team as they are, with the muscle memory of last year, can win the World Series if they do not go out and get themselves something resembling a real closer at the trade deadline?
I won't say categorically no, but it is going to be very difficult. I agree with you. I'm looking at Giles, and his ERA is currently 4.39.
It again Friday night. They lose to the Royals, Bobby, 1-0, and Giles came in, gave a leadoff single, and before long they lose 1-0. Yep.
So I think we all know that we've been talking about that. People have been talking about this from the beginning of the season about their need for a closer, and we'll see whether they can go out and find one. There's certain teams' needs that we know for a fact have been present. The Yankees are going to be in the market for a pitcher for sure, right, Michael? The Red Sox need a second baseman.
A starting pitcher or two, Bob. They might be looking for a starting pitcher or two, even the way they can mash.
And speaking of the Astros, a sports reporter's salute to the best little dynamite package of baseball in the world, Mr. Altuve, who, if you haven't been noticing, is leading the league in hitting, has 108 hits already, which is 8 more than anybody else in baseball. Nothing has changed with him. The beat goes on. He's just a marvel and a treasure.
Bob and Mitch, I wrote a column the other day for MLB.com about how, yes, I get it with Mike Trout. Mike Trout right now is Mickey Mantle in 1956. He's that good, okay? But is it even in dispute off of the last 5 years, guys, that Jose Altuve at 5'6" is the most gifted small player in the history of this sport?
Pound for pound.
Oh, no.
Pound for pound. You're talking about the best player in baseball, pound for pound. And really, the only thing he hasn't done is be the closer for Houston. And he may have to do that, given the way Giles performed last year. I do agree, to touch in on that subject. I do agree that they got lucky last year, considering, I looked this up while we were talking. He allowed 10 earned runs in 7 2/3 innings in the playoffs.
Wow.
And 10 earned runs in 7 innings. Yeah. That's the playoffs as your closer. And, of course, game 4 of the World Series was the end of them. And, by getting Verlander and some of these other guys, Charlie Morton, to pitch at ridiculous times, they managed to do what they did last year. You cannot count on that again. There are positions that you can sneak by with and cover up with a blanket and get through the playoffs and survive. Closer is generally not one of them, not in the way that relief pitchers are used in the playoffs. And so many times you go through 9 pitchers in a 9-inning game. So I agree with you that they've got to, either Giles has to become a different pitcher, or they've got to do something, or that will be a serious handicap going into the
Hey, Mike, I'd like to have a guy stand next to Altuve, and we can measure them to see who was a bit taller. There was one other guy in the discussion I think we have to acknowledge.
Joe Morgan.
Yes, the back-to-back MVP trivia
but
guy.
Bob, Bob, I went, no, I've talked to Joe about Altuve, okay? And I looked at Joe's stats, and this kid has better stats. And I know it was a different world. This is what Joe Morgan said to me last summer, okay, about Altuve. And we were talking on the phone one day, and I said, do you think it's insulting to constantly qualify Altuve's greatness as a player by referencing his size? This is the quote from Joe. I think you do insult him. You know what they used to say about me, right? He's a good little player. But then they look at Trout and say, that's what a great player is supposed to look like. And trust me, this is nothing against Mike Trout. I love watching him play baseball too. But right now, I honestly believe Altuve is the best all-around player. I don't know what box you don't check with him. I don't think of him as being small anymore because nothing about his game is small.
No, he's wonderful. We're all.
And by the way, Joe Morgan, Bob, you're preaching to the choir. He was my favorite player. I was a second baseman. He was my favorite player of all time.
You can still see that elbow pumping, you know?
Oh man,
let me throw. We're talking to celebrating guys who have lived up to and then beyond their expectations. Let's talk for a second about a guy who's gone the other direction this year, Bryce Harper. Very interesting. Bryce Harper has a big ego and generally in the past has performed up to it. Now he finds himself in the money year of his career. You know, he's a free agent after this year. This was going to be the contract that was going to break all of baseball's bank's history. And he's hitting .213 and can't get out of his own way. And this is not May. This is almost July. Now, he's still hitting home runs, but .213 for a guy whose career
I think he went all the way up to .219 last night with a three-hit night, by
the way. .219. Okay, .219. But this is a guy who's a career basically .280 hitter. He hit .319 last season, and this is the money year. I far be it from me to get into a guy's head, but you wonder if Bryce Harper thinks about his own largesse. You wonder if he's just thinking about it too much. Like, I got to have the monster year this year, and look at how much money I'll be able to make. And exactly the opposite has happened to him.
Go ahead, Mike.
Go ahead, Bobby.
I was thinking, yeah, and how much that he has been measured against and compared to Mike Trout. These are the two guys.
But it's not even close now, Bob.
No, I know.
When was the last time we had the conversation that it was Trout and Harper and then everybody else? Not lately.
No, not certainly not in 2018. But I mean, I don't know how much he was, you know, anything factors into that. But it's astonishing, frankly. I don't have a rational explanation. I don't have the technical explanation. I don't know that how they're pitching him, or whether there's something that they discovered. I just don't know. But I do know that this is a startling development.
He might have been on his way to a second MVP before getting hurt last year. I get that. And the thing about Bryce Harper that I have to constantly remind myself when I look at his statistics at the present time, he is still just 25 years old. He is just 25 years old. But when you look at his resume, he has hit 30 home runs, more than 30 home runs once. He had 42 in his MVP year. He's hit 300 twice. I know he's been hurt slightly this year, not physically, but by not having Daniel Murphy with him until recently. And Daniel Murphy was a very important part of that batting order. But again, I'll ask you this question, Mitch. And there was this perception that the two cover boys of the sport were Trout and Harper. And right now, Mike Trout has simply left him in the dust.
Well, Mike Trout does it all and does it all right. He's celebrated for his personality and his approach to the game far more than Bryce Harper was. Bryce Harper was, and has been tolerated for his occasional sort of self-aggrandizing attitude because he's got the goods. And if you can do it, it ain't bragging, as we all know, and has been said many times in sports. But he's 75 games in to 2018, almost a halfway point, and he's hitting .219. He's got 19 home runs.
Leading that league, by the way, there's a ton of guys in the American League who have a lot more.
He's got 46 RBIs. He leads the league in walks currently. So it's not as if everything is bad. But you do wonder, it would be really interesting to see if he if this is just a year long thing, and he finishes the year at 230, and he has, you know, 30 something home runs, does he actually get less money when he's a free agent, or is everybody just going to say, "Are you kidding?" You know, we all know who he is. He's going to get the same money no matter what.
He's going to get paid, and here's what's going to happen, Mitch. They're going to give him one of those dumb 10-year contracts. You wait and see. Maybe it'll be 8, or maybe it'll be 10 with an opt-out after 7, but they're going to give him one of those Cabrera, Pujols, Cano-like contracts that in 5 years that they'll be regretting unless you've signed him and he's won your team a couple of World Series.
Except that, as you point out, they're giving him that contract when he's 25, unlike the one they gave Miguel Cabrera in his 30s that will take him basically till he's 40, except I seriously doubt he's even going to be playing by that point. And the Tigers will never recover from this contract. They'll never be able to move him. They're paying him $30-plus million a year, and he's out for the year, and he's totally injury-prone. So you're right. You don't want to give those contracts out, but if you have to compete with other teams to do it, at least you're giving it to a 25-year-old.
And by the way, guys, before we exit baseball, I want to cover our collective butts because we have to take into consideration that while we are harping on a retrograde statistic called batting average that is no one cares about anymore, as opposed to on-base percentage or slugging or and other, no, it's not about BA anymore. It's about OPS and OBP, and that if they hold up, you know, he's got the walks, which is going to contribute to his OBP. And so forth. We don't want to trap ourselves into this old line thinking. I'm just covering us. Go ahead.
Let me tell you something. If I'm the team that's going to pay him $350 or $400 million, I'm not paying him that money to walk.
I'm just saying, that's all. I just want us covered. I'm protecting.
And are you now going to fall into line and say wins don't matter anymore for pitchers?
I'm protecting our brand, Mike. That's all. Okay? And the fact, Mike, wins aren't as important. No, Mike, you have to get along board with that. Sorry.
Okay. It is on that note, time for our parting shots. And Mike Lupica, please lead off.
Okay. Now that our friend, and I think of him as our friend now, Julian Edelman, is going to mount this so-called vigorous defense as he fights his 4-game suspension, I was thinking about Ryan Braun, who tested positive in baseball after the 2011 season and mounted a far more vigorous defense of himself. You remember this. He challenged the integrity and the competency of the man who collected his sample. He challenged baseball's policy. He ended up getting to play the 2012 season, which was the last time he looked like a great baseball player. Eventually, of course, Braun admitted that he did it and ended up serving a suspension. In the years since, he has been a good, if not great, player when healthy. 2 years ago, he hit 30 home runs and knocked in 91 and hit .305 for the Brewers. But now he's 34 years old, hitting .239 in 60 games with 8 homers and 31 RBIs. I'm not saying that Edelman is Braun. All of these cases are different. These are two different guys from two different sports. But every time somebody like Edelman does put the system on trial, I can't help but think of Ryan Braun.
Laurent Duvernay-Tardif. Oh, God, I love saying that. Laurent Duvernay-Tardif is an offensive lineman for the Kansas City Chiefs. He is also a newly minted graduate of McGill University Medical School. That's right. You can call me Doc. Now, he is asked to have the appellation MD put on his jersey, on his back. Cool. I mean, come on. Isn't that great? But the NFL says no. What? The NFL gives multiple opportunities to domestic abusers, DUI perps, and many other miscreants, not to mention it tolerates numerous narcissistic wide receivers. Now there is someone to brag about, and they don't get it? This isn't a matter of it being the No Fun League. It's about it being the NCL, No Clue League. Oh, congratulations, félicitations, Laurent Duvernay-Tardif.
Oh, I'm going to do mine in English. Here's a switch. We're all used to hearing how Kentucky basketball vacuums up the top 18-year-olds in the country, takes them out of high school, lets them play 1 year, and rockets them into the NBA. So I had to blink when I read that Reed Travis, who was 22, who just graduated from Stanford, has transferred to Kentucky to play out his final year of eligibility. Given how young Kentucky usually is, this is like a real-life Uncle Drew coming back to show the kids a thing or two. Except that this relative octogenarian in college hoops averaged nearly 20 points and 9 rebounds last year for Stanford. He's a strong 6'8" forward with a lot of savvy, obvious intelligence, and a plan. His plan, clearly, now that he has a diploma from maybe the best university in the country, is to add a ring. And he may just get it. By joining a recruiting class that's already ranked number 2 in the nation and buoyed by the return of PJ Washington, Reed increased Kentucky from a 7-1 favorite to a 5-1 favorite to win the national championship just by transferring. Congratulations to Coach John Calipari. He finally got a new star who actually knows how to shave. That's going to wrap it up for today's program. The Sports Reporters Podcast is heard every Monday and Friday, which means we'll be back on Friday with a lot of more World Cup news. And oh, by the way, I think that coincides with the free agency about to happen in the NBA. There are a couple of guys that show some interest in that area, so we'll be talking about that as well. Until then, if you enjoyed our program, please leave us a comment. If you didn't enjoy it, please leave us a comment and tell your friends that they can get it anywhere you get popular podcasts. On behalf of Mike Lupica and Bob Ryan, this is Mitch Albom saying, have a great week.
Au revoir, Laurent.